Welcome to GVC Unplugged, a podcast made by employees for employees. Hear interviews and discussions with coworkers, stay informed about GVC news and projects, and catch up on the latest news and happenings at the co-op, and more. Let's get started.
Hey, GVEC team. Thanks for tuning in to the award-winning GVEC Unplugged podcast. You've got Sherry Johnson here today with an episode devoted to all of our married couples out there. This time of year tends to be a wedding season, so we wanted a couple to share with us a hobby that they enjoy together. And this episode will appeal to all of our outdoorsmen out there because we're going to talk about hunting. Although I don't know that it's prime hunting season right now, but we'll find out. Today, I'm joined by Aaron Peschick, Communications Technician 1 for the Field Communications Department, and Courtney Peschick, GIS Manager and Systems Analyst. So how are y'all doing today?
Doing good. Well.
Yeah. Good. Well, thanks for being here. These two have several things in common. First of all, you are married.
Yes. Correct. Okay. We are married. What? How many years now? I don't even know.
Don't ask me. Come on. For real?
Almost 9 years.
Almost 9 years. Congratulations.
2011. That's all I remember.
12, actually. But
that's close. Oh, you know how close that was?
You were there, right? Yeah. You were at the wedding.
Right on top of it.
That's excellent. And then secondly, you're both hunters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You're saying it was November 11, not November 12?
11, 10, 12.
Okay. Yeah, she's right. That's why.
Courtney's right. She's got it figured out.
Usually
on the wedding date. I can see why that would throw you off, though. 11, 10, 12.
11, 10, 12.
It's out of order.
Yeah, it is out of order. You picked that wrong.
I didn't, yeah.
But yes, okay. We are both hunters. Aaron more so than I am, I would say. He's been doing it all his life.
Before I met her. Yeah, there's a lot of things I probably would have quit by now if it wasn't for her.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Quit hunting?
Certain aspects of it, like dog hunting and things like that. I've been doing that since I was probably 13.
Wow.
And then, you know, running dogs like for coon hunting since as long as I could walk, because my dad did it my whole life. But then, like, so the pigs, I'm pretty much at that point where it's nicer to relax, but, like, no, she has to get her own catch dog. She's like, no, we got to keep going because the kids one day. And then, you know, what do you say to that? You bring the kids in. So I enjoy it still. It is a lot of work.
It's fun.
It's a lot of fun.
I like to watch the dogs work. And now Paisley, our oldest or our daughter, is getting into it and she's trying to run ahead of us. And, you know, she's just all gung-ho. Oh, yeah. So I like watching that now too.
She's really into it.
Yeah. And Easton, he's still, you know, just kind of hanging out. And he likes because we bring snacks on the trip, too. So,
yeah, he's it's about the snacks.
Yeah, he likes the snacks. Yeah.
He wants to go, but, like, he's still in shorts and rubber boots. He doesn't quite understand that.
His legs don't make it as fast. Yeah.
But he's getting there. He's gotcha. On board.
So this has turned into definitely a family outing.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Just the man goes off and mom and kids stay at home.
She'd be upset if I went without her. I'm not even going to lie.
That's true.
She's basically 9 months pregnant, and she has not missed a hog hunt this year.
Wow.
Yeah, not even kidding.
So going back to, you've mentioned coons,
yes.
Raccoons,
yeah.
Hogs.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about what you like to hunt.
Oh, man.
Everything.
It will.
The one I like the most is elk hunting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's something we've done together. We haven't brought the kids yet, but he got his first one on his birthday, how many years ago now?
You probably 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
8 years ago.
Something like that. But the first one I shot, he was on the hunt with me and he can tell the story so much better than I can.
And first of all, I don't think there's elk around here. So no, where no, were
that's
you?
All, that's all out of state hunting. We hunt elk in Colorado, New Mexico. We put in for Utah, Arizona, Wyoming, Montana. I mean, we've got some guys right now. We took hog hunting a couple weeks ago and they're saying that they're going to take us on some, like public land horse pack in Arizona for mule deer. I mean, but we hunt a lot, basically.
With the bigger animals like that, there are tags that you draw for, or is it a lottery system, or how does that work?
Yeah, it's a draw point system, or some are lottery. So yeah,
and some are
just
both.
Depends.
Utah's both. New Mexico's 100% lottery. Colorado's 100% point. So if you know what you're looking at and what your draw statistics are in Colorado, you know, okay, in 5 years I might draw this tag, in 7 years I might draw this. You got a 0.3 point creep every year in this unit for the last few years. So you can kind of watch and know where you're going to be at. New Mexico is different because you may never draw it. You put in based on a percentage. So if you've got 34,000 bow hunters putting in for a late season tag in a unit 34, 15, you know, any of the good Healy units, something like that, your percentage is really low. If you're putting in for a tag that maybe has a much lower success rating or has very rough terrain, your percentages get better, but your hunts are going to be harder, you know.
Okay.
You have to pack
so in. What, explain the point system to me then. I guess that's what you were kind of saying.
Kind
Does
of,
it depend
yeah.
on the terrain of the
Yeah, usually
state?
It depends on the quality of the hunt. There's there's not a lot of gold nuggets out there yet where you can get in and hunt every other year, every 3 years. Most of the good, you can usually get on and tell what's good and what's not. You apply by the points or by your percentage chance of draw. And that's how we base it. We're just like, hey, if we really want to get out in the woods, you put in for something that it may not be the best hunt. You just got to get in shape and put in the miles, you know, and then you may, like, I like to do a good hunt every once in a while. I won't say what unit, but we, oh, because everybody, that'd be the only thing. They'd be like, hey, did you hear that? He put his best elk hunting unit on the podcast. That'd be the only reason for them to listen. And the point creep would go up more than a point a year, probably. But
it's gonna keep some of these secrets safe.
A few of them. But
yeah, you get a point a year, so you put in the draw, and if you don't draw, then they give you a point, and it just accumulates. And
okay,
that's if it's a point system state. If it's a percentage, like New Mexico, you always have the same percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Utah changes; it's like, I don't know, 30-70 or something like that. Points to you know, just chance.
Yeah. And we got lucky. I think it was the first year we put in for New Mexico. We drew.
Yeah,
we put in together. You can put in as like a group, and we both drew, and so that's the one. That's the only one I've gotten is that hunt. So
okay, so tell me about that hunt.
You tell that story.
The whole hunt. It could take us days. What do you?
No.
You just want to hear about your bull?
Well, because
we shot three bulls. We went 3 for 3 on that hunt with archery equipment.
We had three people hunting that with tags, and we all would split up. One was on a private place, and we were on the public, and he would go off somewhere. And we had a buddy there that would come with me, too, because this was my first time ever elk hunting. So he was kind of calling and showing me, you know, how it's done or whatever. And one of the times we were going up this ridge, and we start hearing all the bugling around. Like, that's the coolest sound. That's probably why I love it most.
Absolutely. It's wild.
You're out there and you just hear the bugles. And
this is like early morning.
Early morning and late at night.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, and it depends on the pressure of the unit, too.
Yeah.
How many elk are in the units, you know?
Yeah. And so we hear all these bugles. And so we start literally running, and we're trying to get, you know, you have to play the wind and get downwind and make sure that you're not, they don't smell you before you even see where they're at. And so we're running, and we get in this creek, and the guy's running ahead of me, and he's like deaf, I guess. I don't know.
Just hard of hearing.
Yeah, very hard of hearing. And so like I stop and I see this bull, and he's like, I don't know, 15 yards from me, like up on this, on the top side of the creek. And I'm like, oh, stop, Joe, stop. You know, and I'm, he's not hearing me.
You shouldn't
so I have
even
to, like,
stopped him. You should have just turned around and gone with it. Yeah.
And so he's like, oh no. And then as soon as he stopped, of course, the bull took off and ran. And so I was like, oh, you know, so we started going towards the other ones, and we never did catch up with them. So that was one of them. And then I think it was when you shot yours.
Which one, my first or second?
Because
the only bull I ever wounded was the first.
Your big one.
My big
in
one.
New Mexico. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
He had shot his. And I went off by myself because they were all packing out the bull, and I didn't see anything that time, but of course.
You saw mountain lion tracks, right?
Yeah, I saw mountain lion tracks, so yeah. I didn't go very far from the road that time.
Wouldn't want to run into that.
No.
But then we found this one place. It was a real small piece of public that was kind of surrounded by private, and so we thought we'd just check it out. And we had actually been there before, and it the elk kind of traveled up into the private, you know, right at the time that you need, you know, you couldn't shoot. And so.
And they told me that going in. Joe was like, we got outran. He's like, those elk covered about 5 miles in about 10 minutes. A lot of times, and when you get in the mountains, the private land is going to be along the creeks and the roads. And as soon as you get into the bigger hills and stuff, or, you know, off side of the road, you'll run into the national park or national forest. So as soon as the elk come out of that private, they hit the hills running because they're like everybody and their mom's after us at this point. And a lot of times they lock down and get quiet. So it made sense. It's not always like that, but most of the time. And Joe had kind of mentioned that to me, like, dude, we just got our socks blown off. We couldn't catch them going up the hill. Get ahead of them.
That's fast.
Yeah.
Because they don't look like they're moving fast, but the elk on the walk, they're probably moving 17, 18 miles an hour instead of a walk.
Well, they're huge. How tall or big, aren't
they? They're 600 pounds or so. And that's a big thing, too, because you hear, okay, and, you know, the farther west and the farther north and this, you know, Rocky Mountain elk versus, you know, Eastern elk or whatever, there's different sizes. And there are. They vary by a few hundred pounds. But, like, you'll hear people say, oh, elk 900 pounds. I don't care where you're at. I don't even know if that's, I mean, that's big. You're talking monstrous. I'd say there's 600 to 700, but it's not something I'd want to anybody to hold me to. You know what I'm saying? Yes. Yeah, that's a big bull. But they travel, and they're used to that. They're acclimated to it. So we're flatlanders. You don't realize when you come from 300 foot elevation to over 10,000 feet elevation, sometimes you're winded walking. Sure. And you're trying to keep up with an animal that's moving 18 miles an hour up and down the. So it takes a while to get used to it.
Yeah, probably at least 3 or 4 days where you
yes, a good 3 to 4 days, and then you can catch your breath, but you still can't keep it.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. You know. Yeah, that's true. That would be another one of the elements to overcome. It's what time of year was it when you were there? Was it
September?
September. Yeah.
Only reason I remember that date, not my wedding and my kids' birthdays and all that stuff. It's my birthday and it's my hunting season, so yeah. I can remember that one.
His birthday, we're always hunting in Colorado.
Always hunting on my birthday. Everybody's like, what do you do for your birthday? I'm like, I go hunting every single year. And my wife goes with me. Okay, so yeah, he told me they were coming out of the private and to be listening to him. And he said they move real fast. And if you bugle, they get quiet. So try to cut them off. So I took all those things. I put them all in my cookie jar and was like, okay, I'll remember it and I'll use it when I can. And then, so we pull up. We were running late, right? 15 minutes late.
We were a little late, yeah. It had gotten daylight already.
So we literally parked the truck, and this was a rarity. So like where I shot my bull the day before it was a solid, for us to walk in broad daylight, knew where it was at on the compass, had mapped it out, which I had been hunting. I basically get up at 3 or 4 in the morning, and I may not get back until 3 or 4 the following morning. You know, they'll drive up and down the roads and waiting, trying to find where I'm coming out, because I basically don't come out until I'm ready. And so they were like, oh, this won't be a
this
there's
won't
no
be cell bad. Service. So you're just
oh,
like,
no
hey,
cell
well,
service. So you're just out there. Yeah, you're out there hours from any kind of rescue or safety or
a lot of patience involved.
And a lot of walking. Anyway, so we had walked out. I basically hadn't slept in 36 hours or so, or 40 something hours. I was already, my stomach was tore up. I was throwing up. I had a bloody nose because I had covered. I bet you I'd walk 30 plus miles. And the first day I walked 14 miles by 3 o'clock with Courtney. I had been telling her to break your shoes in because nobody understands exactly how grueling it can get. So she didn't break her shoes in. So 7 miles into this hunt, and we probably started walking at 4 or 5 that morning. And we were...
It was midday.
Yeah. And there was elk a couple hundred yards. And I'm like, all right, babe, you ready? You might get your first chance now. You know, this is awesome. We're in them. And she's like, I can't walk anymore.
Oh. I pulled my shoes off. I had blisters.
The size of quarters, like 4 of them on her feet.
Oh,
and I was like, oh, we're a half a day into a 9-day hunt. You got to be kidding me. I was a little upset.
So I found out what moleskin is.
Yeah, I had some in my backpack, and I gave her the moleskin. I changed socks with her. I took her backpack and her pretty much. She didn't want me to. She fought me. She's like, you don't need to be doing all this. I'm like, whatever.
I said, I'll go back. You go.
Yeah, she's like, you go after the bull and I'll go hunt. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave my wife in the middle of the mountains.
Crippled with blisters.
Yeah, crippled. She can barely walk. So we made it out about 3 or 4 o'clock, and I literally jogged all the way back that evening to where that hunting spot was. I mean,
this kind of sounds like torturous.
It's torturous. It's
but
it's
it
tough.
Sounds like you would do it all over again.
Are you
it's
kidding?
A lot of work, but once you, I mean, like I said, that sound, and then when you shoot one, like
the adrenaline rush,
it's insane.
There's a lot of reward to it. We've never just bought a hunt and went and. You know, paid $5,000 or $10,000. We've got 5 or 6 elk under our belts, all archery. You know, I mean, I've helped several people, our friends, go out and bugle in a bull for them. And I do it because I enjoy being outside. It's not just the kill or the whatever. It's a lot of it's being outside. I didn't have a tag a few years that I've gone in. Buddy and I backpacked into a wilderness in New Mexico for 6 days. We didn't come out. I'm talking backwards as you can get. 3 out of 4 of us came out with pneumonia and different stuff. I mean, it was freezing. It snowed and froze for basically rained for the first 3 or 4 days we were there. But once you're there, you don't just walk out.
You're going to stick it out. Like you said, that reward.
Stick
I
it
can
out.
See now why.
Yeah, but it's beautiful
really,
too.
Really
like while you're up there, you wake up and everything's just white and you're in just giant mountains. And then every place is a little different.
Yeah, like probably one of the best parts is you're in the middle of the mountains and, you know, you're going after these elk and obviously you're not going to be walking all day. So you sit there and you lay down, you take a nap.
Oh, you take naps
on the mountain, like, and eat your snacks and you just kind of chill.
Find a spot in the shade. You fall asleep and you wake up and you're a little warm because the shade's moved on you. But it's very enjoying. I mean, we talk and I'm listening to us and we sound like it's all about just going and killing something. And that's it's a fun end result. But really the reason we do the out of state and the elk and the mule deer is because it's different. It puts you somewhere most people have never been or seen. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun.
I'm sure you are walking in places where a human hasn't been
in a while,
ever, or in a really long time.
A lot of times, you'll get back there and it's quiet. I mean, there's no cars. The stars are bright. It's wonderful. There really is more to it that you can't explain by telling it. If you don't see it, if you don't get to go there, if you don't get to feel the reward of you know, maybe walking for 7 or 8, 10 hours straight, packing in a camp and dehydrated food and boiling water and, you know, doing all that stuff. And there's a lot of reward as well as beauty in it. It's fun. Like, I mean, it's not for everybody though. Don't get me wrong. I've taken people and I've been in places and I'm like, geez, this was a terrible mistake.
That's a bad idea. That's not like you can get out fast either.
No, you don't just, all right, well, you don't want to be here, then leave. It doesn't work like that.
Mm-hmm. Pretty well committed at that point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it sounds like we kind of went off the trail here, which probably happens in hunting quite a bit. So we'll circle back to the beginning of your story with the three bull elk in New Mexico.
Yeah, we were about 20 minutes late. It was daylight and we start walking and we can hear them bugling and they're going up the hill to the place where we can't go. And so we get like halfway there, I think. And I'm
when you turned around, because we just took off. We were probably 400 yards from the truck still.
Yeah.
And I turned around and looked back. And thank goodness it was a little bit of daylight, because Courtney's face is just glowing. Like this white, you know, no paint, no face mask, no nothing. And you have to cover all of your bases because a perfect hunt and a great strategy.
And we're bow hunting, so you have to get close.
You're going to be close. You're not shooting them 200 yards. You're looking at them like we are right here most of the time.
Oh,
I mean, you're close. It's very up close and personal.
Mm-hmm.
And they see that. Elk are right at that point where if you don't move and you have some cover, you're good. But they will key up on that brightness. So, of course, I'm running up the hill anyways, and I turn around and I go, oh, geez, babe, like you ran through some light and you just lit up. I was like, I don't care. We can run 2 miles up here. We can chase these bulls all day unless you get a face mask or put some paint on something. We're not gonna. She's like, well, I forgot the truck. I said, well, go back. So I was like, I'll wait right here.
So he stays there and I run to the back to the truck and then run back as fast as I can. And then we're already late, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, oh, we're never going to get this thing.
They're just getting farther away.
Yeah. And I was already like beat down anyway because they both shot one and, you know, we just been seeing bulls, but I hadn't been able to make one connect. I get back and he wasn't yelling at me, but he was like, come on, we gotta go, you know?
Well, I was in a hurry. I wanted to get done. Hey.
Yeah. So we get up and, we're trying to listen to see, okay, which one should we go after? Because, you know, you can't see them at that point. You're just trying to figure out, okay, which one's the bigger one? And so we hear one that's kind of, I guess.
I asked you. I was like, okay, babe, here's the deal. I can't tell you which one's bigger. I can't see them. Pick one. We're going after that bull. So I think there was maybe three screams that were way off in the distance. And one of them was pretty deep and raspy. And I was guessing he was with the herd because you had like satellite sounding bulls, at least, which you can't ever tell based on a bugle. You know, sometimes the longest, loudest, most beautiful, drawn out bugle is a raghorn. And so you don't actually
That's
know.
Not what
but
you want.
As a good rule of thumb, no.
Okay.
I mean, for your first bull, I guess anything is good because it's not an easy feat. But we heard one and he sounded pretty raspy. And it sounded to me like he was being kind of followed or tracked. If a bull's being tracked, he's always behind all of his cows. If you're behind him, it's really an impossible place to catch up from. And you're not going to bugle a herd bull out of a herd most of the time. So I was like, we're probably going to end up going after satellite bulls, you know, getting something a little bit smaller, but it is what it is. You know, we're going to aim for him because if we stay with him, the rest of the bulls are still going to be close.
Okay, so you get back. You have your paint on now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
we listen for the bull and we pick one out. We start heading towards them. We were moving pretty fast, which is kind of opposite of what you would think with hunting. Like you're normally like being stealthy, and you still have to be stealthy.
Yeah.
But this was a different application too. Yeah.
We knew where the elk were headed. We knew they got a safe haven, probably 4 miles up the hill. And like I said, you know, 15, 20 minutes after they leave the field, it's possible that they're up there, you know, an hour or two in the daylight anyways. They're where they want to be and you can't touch them. But yeah, so it was weird because she's right. Usually you're trying to move slow because they pick up movement. But what was happening was we were jogging maybe 400 yards past where we last heard a bugle. Once we caught up to them and we would get there and I'd cow call and they would bugle again. And I was like, okay, so they're obviously staying ahead of us. So just keep moving, cow call. And we did that for, I don't know, quite a few times. It seemed like we just weren't going to catch up. Yeah. But it probably took us an hour or so.
Yeah.
And then finally we got on this little ridge and I knew we were getting close to the deal. And I was like, hey, we're just going to have to make it basically a run. We get as close as we can to this herd. Cow call is not working, but we got close enough. A little ravine and a little thick patch. And I told Courtney, set up. I was like, if we can get close to this herd bull, we're going to try and essentially piss him off. I'm going to get as close as these satellite bulls are, maybe even upside him a little bit. And I'm going to bugle at him and see what he does. If not, he's going to disappear. We're not going to find him. You know, he's going to get out of our realm. And we got lucky because we got real close. You could hear the footsteps. I knew it was like, okay, try it now and see what happens. I bugled and literally he went from maybe 200 yards, 180 yards with his cows to like right on top of us. Like he came charging in, the bugle changed, it got loud. I go running up the hill behind her because you want to draw him past her, you know.
Okay.
It's kind of the idea for a closer shot, you know. That's where working in a team is pretty ideal. So I'll tell you kind of what I was doing to pull it in, and I'll let her tell you what was going through her head. So I run up the hill and I bugle again, kind of a little runny bugle. I mean, I never blew anything loud or obnoxious.
Are you just making this with your mouth or do you have like a call?
I've got reeds, okay. Reeds and tubes. So I did like a little ratty. I told her, I said, this is going to sound weird. I'm not going to sound like a big bull. I don't want him, you know. So I did. He comes crashing back. I run up the hill. I hear him bugle and I'm thinking he's maybe 50 to 60 yards in front of her behind some cedars. And he kind of hangs up, which they'll do. He's got cows on one side, so you have to make it sound like more than just a bugle. You have to make it sound like there's actually something happening. We've been running. We've been cow calling. He's been paying attention. Now there's a bull there with this cow, and that was enough to upset him. Bull comes crashing in, so now he's listening, but maybe he wants to hear more. He wants to see more. So when elk move, they're loud. They're not as quiet as some people think. While they're smart and they can be quiet, you know, they're knocking over rocks. They're breaking tree limbs. I mean, they might have a 4 foot wide rack on top of their head. You know, there's cow calling and things going on. So I start just tearing up this tree because he hangs up. So my first thought is, well, he's either going to turn and run or walk off, go back to his herd real fast, or I've got to do something that entices him even more. So I start raking this tree, and then I look over in front of her, and there's a cedar tree just getting waylaid. I mean, it's 4 feet back and forth on the top. I'm like, oh, this is incredible. He's fighting that tree. He's right in front of her. She can't see him yet, but he's fixing to come out. I'd start taking rocks and tossing them even farther behind me, you know, and trying to make it sound like things are walking. And then about that time, I'm causing a ruckus, and I look over, and I see her drawing back. And I'm like, oh, here he comes. And right between two cedars, he just sticks his head out and comes walking right towards her.
I pulled back, and so I was waiting a little bit because I knew he was fixing to come through the trees, and you got to hold back the bow, and so that way you're not pulling back whenever he's looking at you. And so he breaks just his head through those trees, and then he just lets out this big bugle, like, right in front of me.
He's, like, 25 yards from her and facing her.
And so, like, of course, my heart is pounding,
yes.
You know.
And my head's saying, okay, she just got freaked out. There's no way she's going to hit this bull.
Yeah, and so the spot that I can shoot through is it's small. Like, maybe, I don't know. I don't even know how big. Smaller than a basketball, of course. It's just tiny.
Well, he's facing you, so you basically have to fit it in between the shoulder blades, okay, above, yeah, the brisket. There's
and not kind. Hit a tree or
right,
something.
Right, right. Yeah. And so, like, I'm trying to be patient, but I also don't want to, you know, him to whip me or scare off. And so I do. I was about to pull the trigger, and I said, no, I'm going to wait. And so I waited a little bit, and he started kind of going off to the side a little bit. And so he's straight broadside from me, probably about 25 yards.
Yeah, about 20.
When I let it loose, and I shot, and I just, like, stood there, and I was like, did I hit him? I look
you
back at Aaron.
You didn't stand there long.
No, well, but, so he takes off running. I knew I didn't know I'd hit him, you know, because whenever that happens with me, I'm not real observant. He can like know if he hit something right away. And I'm just like, okay, I don't know what happened. You know?
Yeah, she turned, I'm 50 yards behind her. It's 25 yards the other way. And she shoots, the bull's literally still running off. And she turns around and she's like, what happened? What
I'm happened? Like, did I hit him? What happened? And then all of a sudden, I hear this crash, and I was like, I jump up and down. I'm like, yeah, you know.
Right, we're on this hill. It's like worse than a 45-degree angle. It's solid rock.
Totally could have broke my ankle.
Oh, yeah, and she's holding her bow overhead and
tumbling
dancing.
Down the mountain.
Yeah, she's dancing
so I'm
around
jumping,
all
and I start running towards him, you know, just because I heard him fall, and I was like, yes, we got to go find him. And
yeah, within 15 seconds, we heard him pile up. I mean, he was hit good.
Yeah, and we get up there, and he's standing up when we get there, and I'm like, what happened?
Yeah, we literally ran right up on top
he's
of
like,
him.
He's like, I don't know.
The hill, and bam, there he is.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, boy.
I said, what happened? He said, I don't know. Get it. Shoot another one.
Shoot again. Don't stop.
I pull back and get ready to shoot him again. And then he just like falls down. Yeah. And I was like, okay, now what? And he said, shoot him. I said, okay, well, I'll shoot him again.
Yeah.
Shot
don't
him.
Stop.
He didn't move. And
I've seen it too many times. Somebody thinks they got something and it gets up and runs off.
And we get up there and it's just huge, huge animal, you know.
Then the work starts.
Right, I was going to say, then.
Yes.
Luckily,
now
we weren't too far. We had to make two trips.
Probably the easiest pack I've ever had in my life.
Because most of the pack was, you went uphill to the bull and then packing it down.
Packing
so you weren't having to pack up the hill, which was nice. It was a lot of fun. So it was nice to have him there and be able to share that with him. And,
oh, yeah. That was awesome. This was our first or second hunt together.
Second.
Yeah.
I knew hunting was not for the faint of heart. But clearly hunting elk is not for
it's
couch
next,
potatoes. You need to be in some serious
you do.
Shape. I have some new respect for anyone who tells me they got an elk now. It's not like the deer hunters that just feed them some corn and then wait and shoot the one they saw on their game camp.
That's right.
It's a little bit different.
You can do it both ways. But generally, if you're going on a guided hunt where you can, and if you're on private property, you can't. But government, you either have to have a horse, no motorized vehicles. Yeah, if you're hunting public land for the most part, it's an experience.
Sounds like you must enjoy the challenge, too.
Yeah.
You wouldn't go back.
Yeah, we're pretty active people, I would say, so.
Suits you.
Yeah, which is why we like the hog hunting, too.
Yeah. So. You got to stay in shape somehow. You might as well make it a hobby that keeps you in shape.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's not too expensive. Well, sometimes.
Yeah, so. Although your wife clearly knows and likes hunting, so you don't have to keep that a secret. On how much you paid for a gun or a bow or
something.
Well,
that's the problem. I can't keep it a secret because she knows. Because she wants to do it too.
Either that or you
but
want to give
I can
it up.
But at least
I
share
she
it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Want it. Although the problem is now when I get gifts, it's hunting related. So then he can use it.
Oh, yeah.
Here, honey, I thought you would like this new vest. So being in New Mexico and all your other wild adventures sounds really fascinating. But since you can't get out there, you know, all the time, what are some things you do around here locally, or how often do you do those things?
We run hogs every weekend, probably, especially like, you know, you were talking earlier about is it season or not? Well, it's hog season to us, you know, because
year round,
all the deer hunters are not in the woods. And so we're just running hogs.
And everybody wants you to get rid of the hogs.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a good relationship with people, as soon as that goes south, you don't have, but we've got tons of places that we can hunt basically all year. We can either run dogs or thermal hunt. I mean, it's pretty much
yes,
never
because they
list.
Can certainly be a nuisance and
oh,
have
yeah.
destroyed lots of property and crops and things like that for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
We do bow hunt during deer season.
Yeah.
We don't do too much duck hunting, just here or there.
No, not anymore.
Dove hunting. That's actually how I started with my dad was dove hunting. We did most of that, but we don't do too much of that anymore. Just kind of
once or twice a year.
Yeah.
That's good. And I'm glad that you enjoy it together and with family. And so since we were also talking about, you know, couples that play together, stay together, does the fact that you're both hunters, does that help, you know, your relationship?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I kind of mentioned while it was quiet earlier, everybody wants that wife. Everybody always tells me, like, yeah, you're the luckiest man in the world. Like, bar none, you have to be the luckiest guy that your wife goes everywhere with you. And she loves to hunt. And even the people that hunt with us, we go up there. I've got four or five buddies that we're in the mountains hanging out for 9 days. And it's Courtney and only Courtney.
You're a brave woman, Courtney.
Yeah. and she has to put up with like the smell of all of us, and she feeds us and everything. I mean, we got the fire going every night, and she's wonderful up there. Like, it is great to have somebody with motherly ability in the mountains. If not, everybody's yeah. like, what are we doing? We're putting some potatoes and foil in the fire, and we're going to eat them later. There's not a lot of planning, you know, at least this way we all get fed well. It is. I'm lucky to have her like to do it with me, and I wouldn't change it for the world. But what those people don't understand, sometimes those guys that are like, oh, it's so awesome, is we spend every minute of the day together. I mean, obviously we work together. We don't see each other. We see each other less during work than we do when we're at home and hunting. You know, we see each other all the time. Then we don't really have a hobby that is apart.
So you don't have a great escape.
There's no great escape. And that would be the downfall. It's not a big downfall, but that would be the only.
It's the trade-off.
Yeah, that's the trade-off. Everywhere I go, I mean, there is no, oh, we're going to, there's no boys get away this weekend.
She won't let you leave her at home.
No, and I can't. And I don't want to. It would be nice every once in a while.
So was it at a deer camp or on a hog hunt? That was the moment you knew she was the one for you.
It was probably the moment we met, is what I'm supposed to say. But she was kind of dating somebody, so I can't say that. But after we started hanging out for a while, I had a buddy at the time that had dogs. And '06. Uh-huh. I took her on one hunt. Wasn't very good. I was surprised she wanted to go back. I was like, nobody would want to go back. I mean, to something like that. It was hot. There were snakes out. Ended up running into issues with my buddy's dogs a few times. So the next hunt, we were at a friend's house along the river. And we were like, okay, well, we're going to park. And, you know, when we get to the end of the hunt, it's maybe a mile and a half. We get to the end of the brush, I'll circle around, I'll grab the trucks and come back.
We were walk hunting with the dogs. And
I would say that was the hunt, though. It wasn't like the hunt, but it was definitely, it was a moment in our relationship where I was like, that's too funny and too good, you know.
We make the walk hunt and we didn't get on anything. No. So we get to the road and Aaron's like, well, I'm gonna jog back, go get the truck. And so he starts jogging and I guess he almost gets right to the truck, almost.
No, I was probably a half mile from y'all, but I still had a mile to go to get to the truck.
Okay.
And I looked to the field, like I looked to the right, because I'm like, what did I just hear? There's a little black dot cruising through the field. And I'm like, that's a hog. Wait a minute, there's a pig running there. Where'd that come from? Like, we just hunted all of it. And I look back, and as far as I can see, I see hands and feet. They're running towards the creek.
There's hogs running. And keep in mind, like, I didn't grow up hog hunting. I didn't hardly ever seen a hog. I did dove hunting. So I didn't really know the impact of what they could do or anything. So I'm on this hog hunt.
Obviously, you'll find that out in a
bit. I'm on this hog hunt and I'm just walking along with these guys that, you know, I don't really know what's going on. They hadn't really told me much, I guess. And
we really hadn't.
No. So he leaves, go get the truck, and all of a sudden these pigs are just running by us. I'm like, oh, look at there. There's, you know, hogs running everywhere. And there's bay dogs and there's catch dogs. And Derek had his catch dog, and so he cuts her loose to one of the pigs. And
Old Moon.
Yeah. And so he starts running. I'm like, okay, well, I guess I gotta run after him. So I'm running after him, and he goes to try and, you know, grab the pig.
He, like, jumps down in the creek, right? There's some water in the bottom of the creek.
Yeah, and he tries to grab it. Well, he falls. And so I'm running after this pig and this dog. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just running after it. And he starts yelling at me, grab the whatever. And so I reached to grab the pig. Well, I didn't know, you know, apparently he was saying grab the leg, which that's not what I thought he said.
That sounds pretty obvious, though, right? I mean, grab the leg.
What I heard is grab the neck. So I jump on the back of this hog, like hugging it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, trying to tackle it to the ground.
Got a catch dog on it. It's running with the catch dog.
And it's just dragging me.
That's Courtney with a hog in a headlock.
Luckily, it didn't have any teeth or anything, but I had no clue, like, what they could do. And
I didn't see any of this because I'm like, I'm just going to keep running towards the truck. I'm already moving that direction. You know, that's a long way to go. I'll go get the truck, come back.
So I slip off, and he ends up grabbing it and doing his thing or whatever, and we're just hanging out there, and Aaron gets back, and he's like, what happened?
Well, she's covered in mud. She's got mud from the top of her head and hairline to her kneecaps and ankles. I mean, she's just covered in mud. And I'm like, that never happens. And Derek's just sitting there. He's kind of chuckling, and he's also kind of bright red. And he's like, dude, I know you're going to be upset. And I was like, everything looks okay. Why would I be upset? You know, dogs look good. Y'all look good. I have no idea what she just did, but So he's like, yeah, so it got away. And I was worried. So I'm yelling at her, like, grab the hog, grab it by the leg, you know. And he said, she just tackled it. She just jumped on his back. And I was like, wait, what? And he's like, yeah, like her face is by the ear and she's got both arms around its neck. And it was just kind of dragging her around. And I was, that's dangerous. Like, that is super dangerous. And, but she was okay. So I wasn't upset. It was funny. But that was kind of one of those moments where I was like, man, this chick is tough.
She is, I would say
if I don't get a whole lot else out of this relationship, how many guys can be like, yeah, once my wife form tackled a 200-pound chick? Yeah.
I wouldn't say it was 200.
No, it was a nice, it was a good size sow. But it was funny. We had our laughs. And to this day, he pretty much brings that up. You know, we don't see him as often anymore, but it was a fun time.
That's good.
It was different.
That's
good. I knew she was tough and it stuck. Nobody just does that on a, like, I'm going to do this to impress somebody.
Right.
Yeah.
No.
It's got to be in your blood a little bit.
Say so. You brought it out in her for sure.
Yeah.
So kind of also talking about Father's Day, because you'd mentioned it too. So you grew up with your dad then hunting dove, and you said you grew up with your dad doing things. So as a dad, Aaron, do you feel like it's important to pass it on to your kids?
If they want to, absolutely. I like the fact that our kids, we just kind of mention it, show them. They're like, oh, do you want to go to your friend's house and maybe go to the pool? Or you know, do y'all want to go to the bounce house? Or, you know, or do y'all want to go hog hunting? And it's awesome that they're like, well, let's go hog hunting.
Let's go. Of course, it sounds like mom had a lot of influence.
Oh, a lot. Oh,
yeah,
yes.
For sure. So one other part about hunting that a lot of people might not think about, because like you said, you know, it's not all about the kill necessarily. And there's also a conservation aspect to it too, where, you know, it just helps control the population and maintain their health. And so, I mean, what are y'all's thoughts on?
Yeah, we actually had a couple of years ago, we had a contract with the Missouri City, and it was a development property, and they there was a neighborhood there, and the hogs were going in the neighborhood.
Yeah, the homeowners association was calling a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And we had to get insurance and go through the whole ordeal. And it was, you know, to kind of pigs do carry some diseases, mm-hmm. and brucellosis, and I don't even know what else. But, you know, I guess being they were hanging out in the same area, these kids were playing, and they're like, hey, we need them removed, and we don't want people in here shooting guns. And it just worked out. First time we went in there, we got stopped by the police. But we did get back out there. The homeowners called, and they raised enough heck, and he called us back, finally, the guy, the owner, and was like, hey, if y'all can get a $500,000 insurance policy, you can hunt both of these tracks that we've got. I don't know, 700-800 acres, but.
Wow.
But there was an ungodly amount of pigs in
I've never seen. We caught 300 pigs, over 300 pigs the first couple of months.
A normal hunt, you'd catch 20.
Yeah. A good hunt was 30 plus.
Yeah.
Courtney almost got ran over by a whitetail one time.
Yeah, a big whitetail.
Big whitetail, yeah. Awesome.
But yeah, I mean.
Didn't try to grab it by the neck?
I
was surprised. I was shocked. I was like, wait, you let a deer jump over you and you didn't try to do anything about it?
Yeah, I'm sure y'all have lots of fun stories you can tell around the campfire.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, I mean, we've got lots of farmers who call and they just tear up the crops and, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, pecan bottoms, rice fields, corn fields. You name it. If somebody's got it and they know we hunt, a lot of times they'll get a hold of us, and we'll hit, you know, specifically more of those times of the year more often while the crops are in or something.
Sure.
Then the rest of the time we just, you know, we'll do it recreationally,
mm-hmm.
Just to keep them off of friends' places or whatever. But there's no getting rid of those things. No.
They do seem like they're here to stay.
They're
for
here
sure.
to stay. I don't know of any way you could really get rid of them.
But one thing we've been wanting to get into, which we did it back when we first started dating, is do like the bow shoots.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we did a couple when we first started, but
that's once the kids get big enough to where they can all participate, mm-hmm. you know, go do the 3D shoots and stuff. That's fun.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that'd be a good way to really teach about safety. And I'm sure mm-hmm. y'all have lots of rules and understandings around your house and
we do.
How to handle it. So that's a good thing that comes out of it as well.
I think it's good to educate them on you know, what everything is and what they do. And then if they come across it, they know.
Yeah, even if they don't love it like we do when they're adults, at least they know what to do in situations where you have, you know, firearms and knives and things like that that are kind of dangerous, you know.
You said it. So if they're in a situation, they understand the gravity of it and it's important. Yeah. And
they know how to
be responsible.
Because nobody is going to react in certain situations the right way, you know, just if they've never seen it. Mm-hmm. But if it's something you've done, you could make a life or death situation for you or somebody else. And that's good because I feel like our kids will have a much better grasp than most kids.
Yep, it's not a toy, that's for sure. Not mm-hmm. kind of a game or anything.
Mm-mm, no.
So I think it's about time that we wrap it up. Even though, you know, like I said, we could keep chatting. But I had a final question for y'all, and that was, who's most competitive?
Depends on what you're talking about.
I don't know. We're both very competitive.
Yeah, it's not even good. It's not healthy sometimes. But we help each other. We know we're so competitive that, like, when it comes to the baseball games and stuff, like with the kids, like I'll start doing something and she'll be like, God, now's not the time. And then she'll start like, come on, Paisley. And I'm like, she's six, babe. So we work with each other because we understand how competitive each other are.
Yeah, that's great. So I guess you can stick together, be on the same team.
Both on the same team. Probably better on the same team generally.
And hunting an elk or on the baseball field.
Yep.
Well, I really enjoyed it and I appreciate y'all's time and sharing your stories.
Thank you. It was fun.
Yeah. We've got so many more. I feel like we didn't even get started. I know. We just talked about random nonsense. I was like, man, there's so many questions and so much stuff we could go into.
Well, we'll welcome you back anytime. Maybe when it gets to be around deer season or elk season, you can tell us more about your stories.
Other guys with other opinions too this time. That would be great.
Tell us some good recipes too.
Recipes.
Okay, it sounds like we've got a part two in the making here. Didn't get it all covered.
All right,
well, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode or have ideas on how we can make the podcast more interesting, email gvecunplugged@gvec.org with your feedback. Be sure to subscribe to the GVEC Unplugged podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts to be notified when new episodes are released. Take care of each other, GVEC team, and stay safe until next time.